Hello, hello, hello there, and welcome to another money-making episode of the I'ma Keep Going podcast, or again, as I like to call it, the IKG. Of course, I'm Eric, and I thank you once again, and as always, I appreciate you continuing to listen in and rock with me. 2020 has been, it's been a shit show, y'all. We already know this, and my hope is that it begins to get better, but if we can all get through it together, then I think it will be better. And with everything going on, I hope that I'm somewhat of a sound voice in all of this chaos. Plus, I be trying to give you all the good stuff, you know, like how important mental health is and how it's good to manifest certain desires that you have. And that actually works, y'all. It can lead to really good results, believe me. And also about making sure your finances are good. And I must say, I've talked to quite a few people thus far on this podcast. And if you haven't noticed, there's been kind of a trend. And if you haven't recognized it yet, I've had nothing but black queens on my podcast. And there's a reason for that. I chose to go that route, actually, because to be honest with you, we don't recognize the importance of our black women in this world, y'all. And a few months back, I had an episode called Love and the Significance of Our Queens. And if you want, you can go take a listen to that particular episode. It was a very, very good one, y'all. It was a very eye-opening one for me. And I made the decision at that point to focus on my black queens. You know, I wanted to showcase them in the best way that I can by giving them a platform to speak, you know, on their thoughts and on their views, business practices, whatever insight they have, and anything else under the sun. So for the most part, I tend to interview and have conversations with black women because, let's face it, if it wasn't for a black woman, I wouldn't even be the person that I am today. Well, scratch that. If it wasn't for a black woman, I wouldn't even be here today, period. And with that said, I'm continuing on this conversation of ownership, y'all, or as I like to call it, ownership. If you haven't caught up to the last two episodes of the series, and I suggest that you go back and you take a listen to them, because the first one was about social media and how some people think it's their friend and it's a great business move, but sometimes it really isn't. And the second one was about intellectual properties and how important it is to own your name, to own your brand and everything. And that one was really good too. So this one will be the final installment of the ownership series. And I like to talk about this one a lot because it's kind of a hot topic at the moment, which is stocks. So there's so many people right now who really don't know about stock, but they want to get involved in it because they're pretty interested and they're scared. And I mean, you know, I can understand that. You know, you're going on to Wall Street, you're going to the tickers and you're seeing all these numbers and you're like, what the hell does that mean? And it can be scary, y'all. I know it can. But I heard something today that actually spoke volumes to me. Somebody said, whatever scares you, go do it. So I did it. And it ended up being pretty easy, to be honest with you. And that's why I have my good friend and finance guru, Angie Mitchell, from the Sincerely Angie podcast on here again, so we can both help you understand some of the basics. So grab your pencil and paper, because we're about to take y'all to class. So it's time to stock up. But thank you once again, y'all, for listening in to another episode of the I'ma Keep Going podcast. We're continuing on with our series of financial freedom and everything from ownership we talked about a couple weeks ago. Last week we talked about intellectual properties and how important that is to be and how important of a part that plays in leaving a legacy. And you know, I brought the illustrious Angie Mitchell back on again for the third and final time for this month, because I'm pretty sure we're going to talk again soon. I hope.
Yes, absolutely.
But I brought the lovely Angie Mitchell back again so we can just talk more about something that you had mentioned last week about stocks. Mm-hmm. Well, it was something that I wanted to kind of get into, but I guess it was a much better opportunity. We wanted to get a little bit more information on some certain things because we talked about stocks one time before. Didn't really go into detail, but I think this time we need to give the people a little bit more of a better breakdown of why the stock market is important. And
yes,
and I was, listening, going back to something that I said in a couple of episodes ago, watching a YouTube video, and one of the things that the guy said on the YouTube video is having a stock portfolio, being able to build a stock portfolio, and understanding what it is that's all incoming, well, that comes into investing, and you know, and what to look for, you know, some of the pitfalls to look for, and you know, just overall being able to gain money while you sleep. And
yes,
the stock market is easy, is one of the easiest ways of being able to do that. But
it is.
But without further ado, I have the lovely Angie Mitchell here again.
Hey, y'all.
Look,
you.
Look, again, you're a family, man.
I am home. This is home.
Right. It's time to give you a key now. We got to give you, got to make you a key for the house.
Absolutely. I don't know why it's taken this long for me to have a key.
But as you can see, though, you've been very instrumental in this particular series, the finance series of the I'ma Keep Going podcast. Again, September is all about financial freedom and about living a financial life, you know, and being able to create those financial opportunities. And so just to kind of give a little bit of a recap, the first episode for the month of September, we talked about how important it is for ownership and when it comes to social media and how you really don't own that stuff that's on social media, how it plays a role in, you know, leaving a legacy and things like that. And then and last week we talked about intellectual properties and how important that is to be able to understand what intellectual properties is, you know, what the idea of an intellectual property is, what how owning your stuff is much more important and much more vital than being able to sell it to someone else or sell it off to someone else, because you know the significance of your product more than someone else will ever will. Yep. And so now we're just going to kind of bring it on home with the whole idea of stock market, you know, of the stock market. And right now, stocks are important.
It is. And it's you're part owner of a particular company. Many people may not know that when you buy into it, it's kind of like you own you. Of course, you're not taking full ownership of this company. You could buy 100 shares and you don't own the company, but you are buying into this company. You have shares in this company. You own part of this company, so to speak. So when you get the emails telling you, hey, come and vote on these board members or something like that, you have a say so on what happens with this business. I know I'm jumping the gun, but it all ties into the ownership and intellectual property. I know with stocks, you don't necessarily have that intellectual property aspect, but it still goes into owning something and something that is yours and something that can be passed down to your legacy. And what I mean passed down from stocks is the financial gain that you'll get from those stocks.
From those stocks, exactly. And I like what you said just now about the whole idea of ownership and owning a portion of the company. You know, and you're right about that. You are, once you invest in stock or invest in a certain company's stock, you become part owner of that stock, albeit, again, it's a small owner portion of it, but an owner is an owner nonetheless, right? So I think I got a name for it now.
Uh-oh.
I think we should call it ownership. Instead of ownership, owner shit. So we're owning, owning shit.
Yes. I was getting ready to say, not like the doo-doo brown shit. It's just like you owning shit. Like you own. Yeah, I got you.
I like that. Okay, boom. We got a name. This series is called Ownership. So, but
we're on our owner shit. Like we're on top of this thing of owning ish. Right. We're on it.
we are. We really are. And that's, and again, that's one of the main reasons why I wanted you on, because you are big on that. You're a big proponent of that. You know, even the people we are around, everybody from Ariane to Anitra to Paris to, you know, to Ken, you know, everyone that we are around, they're all about owning things and owning portions of certain things and just being able to say, I'm an owner. I'm an owner of something, you know. So I do want to talk about that, though, about the financial aspect of it all now and about and how important stock markets, how important playing the stock market is, especially during this time of COVID and, you know, and unrest. We talked a little bit offhand about getting a financial advisor and, or just the idea of a financial advisor. And my question to you was, do you need to have an actual, well, not to take out of anyone else's pockets, you know,
right?
From Edward Jones or any place like that or whatever. But a lot of this stuff when it comes to advising people, a lot of it is research. The majority mm-hmm. of the things that we do are research, you know?
Yeah.
And wouldn't you say that having somebody who can advise you on certain things, on certain topics or certain pieces of stock or certain pieces of finances or whatever would be much better for you also?
Absolutely.
And on top of you knowing it yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can do your own research and find me right now at this stage in my life. Would I get a financial advisor where I'm actually paying someone or I'm retaining someone to give me financial advice or to manage my finances or anything like that? No, not right now at this point in my life. Am I opposed to it? I am not. I can on another note though, have a financial mentor. So this is someone who I can go to for anything as it relates to finances, any questions that I may have, any direction that I may need, or any type of assistance. I can go to this person and I trust that they will point me in the right direction or give me the necessary tools. So I am still always going to do my own research, but I am going to go to someone else as a backup plan. But an actual financial advisor, I do believe that at some point in your life, if you can afford it, because they're not free. If you go the legal route or the professional route, I should say, there's a fee that comes with being a financial advisor. Now, like I said, if you have a mentor, most mentors are not charging you. So that's probably a route that someone could take. But also on top of doing your own research, you never just take anyone's word for anything, not even mine.
Right. Right. And I agree with that. I believe having not only your word, but other people's words and other people's insight on certain things will definitely help you build that portfolio that you need.
Yes.
And like you said a few seconds ago, I don't think there's anything wrong with having an actual financial advisor, someone that you have on retainer that can get information or whatever. But, you know, for right now, you know, we are just everyday people. You know, mm-hmm. we are, you know, everyday people who are learning to try to build better ways of creating income. And one of the best ways of being able to do that, you know, on a small term basis is understanding or knowing exactly what it is that you want or knowing how much money you want to make. And also knowing the basics on how to be able to receive some level of financial independence.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you will need, I believe once you start making, you know, when you're in the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, then obviously you will want to get mm-hmm. professional financial
right.
advice.
Yes.
But, you know, if we just kind of plan, like, this is for the simple folk. This is for the people who don't have a lot of money to put into it right now.
And, beginners, you know,
right,
just
for the beginners.
Out, yeah.
Right. You know, it's for us who have, a couple hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 or whatever to play around with
mm-hmm.
and be able to build that level of wealth to whereas we can get to the next level and start paying someone to look at our money for us
yes.
and to monitor our money for us, you know, so you got to do the legwork now on your own, you know, not to say that you can't go to a financial advisor with $500 because you can, obviously
yeah.
you can, but do mm-hmm. you honestly believe they will give you more attention at that $500 level versus someone who has $250,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm pretty sure. And again, it's just business. They would,
yeah.
I believe they would put more emphasis on helping these people because these people have a say in your job at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Versus mm-hmm. someone, you know, you only got like a $500 or $1,000, even though your money is just as important as the one who has a quarter of a mil.
Yep.
You know, just looking at it from a beginner standpoint. And again, that way you can also go to them and say, hey, this is what I found, you know, because it's always about going to people with solutions. So,
yes,
with that being said, let's try our best and break it down to the simplest molecule on or like my wife says all the time, break it down to me like I'm a third grader. I said, OK. So, we should get into the very bare bones basics on how to be able to, first of all, why it's important now more than anything to invest into some stock. Two, how easy it is to start, and you don't need a lot of money to start. And three, you know, how you can continue to thrive with that just by building, you know, by having people that you can talk to and stuff like that who are all into it as well. So, so let's start from the beginning, like being able to, you know, like, why is it important? Why do you believe it's important now than anything to invest into some stock?
Okay. So as always, whenever you ask me a question, I have to go to the beginning. So I'm going to start at the beginning.
Right.
So I'm still pretty much a novice when it comes to stocks. I'm not the expert. I am not, you know, I'm not there yet, but I know enough. So it's been almost 3 years now that I have been trading stocks or buying stocks or in the stock market. It's almost 3 years, but it's important to start now. Number one is because, as we've been talking about this whole month, ownership is key. Like, that is what we're doing. We're looking to own some things and to work smarter, not harder. We want our money to work for us. We want our money to grow while we're sleeping, while we have absolutely nothing to do with it. While we are sitting down recording this podcast, our money is growing for us without us even knowing it. And a way to do that is to buy stocks. That is the easiest way. And I will try my hardest to make it that third grade level. But I have been talking to my best friend about it. And as I'm explaining it to her, she's like, dumb it down some more, dumb it down some more each time. And I'm like, I don't know what else to tell you. Right, I don't know. So it's important to start now because of COVID, a lot of companies' stock went down to, I mean, very low prices, and per share, you were getting an actual steal for your money. So while stocks are low, I think that everyone should be investing. And when I say low, I mean, y'all know me by now. If y'all don't know, I'm frugal. I'm cheap, and I want everything for free if I can get it. But when things are not free, I want the best bang for my dollar. So most stocks that I have purchased have been less than $20 per share. So that way I can get multiple shares. Now, you do have the Apple and Tesla that are the talk of the town right now, which are hundreds of dollars per share each. So you want to make sure that you are getting in now, because there are stocks that are very lucrative who are at a low price right now, but they will rise. And I'm just going to say this real quick, and this is kind of off the topic, but it's something to be mindful of. Stocks, it is a rise and fall game, but there is also a trend that happens, and it's either, it's called the W game or something like that it's called, but it's where the stocks are high, they get low, they rise a little bit again, they fall again, and then they go back up to where they were meant to be. And that's where we are currently. We are in that W, that last downslope. And so the stocks are going to rise. We're in, because we've seen them go down, we've seen them rise again, and they're currently going down again. So the next step is for the stocks to rise. So that's what we need to do. We need to get in now while they're low, so that when they go up higher, that is more money in our pockets. Not that we're going to cash out right, you know, when it happens, but that we'll put more money in our stock portfolio. Was that too much?
No,
did I do too much? I'm sorry.
No, but no. And the reason why I'm sighing like that is because you broke it down like I was in the third grade just now.
You think so?
I hope so. Yeah, the W curve is kind of like what you called it just now, the W trend. And what you said just now is what I've been preaching to people, you know, to a couple of people who have asked me about this and who have called me about this. Right now we're at that last W, the last lower portion of the W before it starts to shoot back up again. You know, obviously, when COVID happened, it ended up starting at that downward, that super downward slope or whatever, down to nothing. You know, a lot of these stocks were literally, we're talking about stocks that were trading at like 60, 70, 80 bucks a share, and now going down to like $9 a share, $10 a share, you know?
Yes.
And obviously, you know, as this is at the beginning in March, and if you want, you can definitely look it up. You can go to any of your financial apps or whatever, or you can even go to Yahoo Finance or Apple Finance or whatever, and you can see it for yourself. Mm-hmm. At the start of COVID, there's only maybe three or four things that actually stay consistent. And a lot of these things that stay consistent were consistent because of the way the trend that COVID was going, like, you know, everybody staying at home. So companies like Zoom, Apple, obviously Microsoft or whatever, they begin to go at an upward slope or upward incline. So, but again, we'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, everything went down. Like, everything went down. Like, it was tragic. And then you can start to see things start to kind of go back up to an incline, like maybe sometime around July or so, you know, mid, because people started coming out, they started opening up a lot more, you know, so business started to kind of get back into a little bit into the swing of things, not 100%, but maybe at about 50% capacity, which is that second part of the W, right?
Yes.
Went back down again, because that's when the second round started hitting. So we're getting to that point, like you said a few minutes ago, Angie, that where everything is beginning to go back up again. It's beginning to go back up. And, you know, once everything begins to open up more, a lot more, then it's going to continue to rise. Yes. I'll give you a perfect example of that. Just recently I posted on social media before I did my fast of Royal Caribbean. So Royal Caribbean is an example of that. And when COVID happened or whatever, at the very beginning, obviously all of these cruise lines, anything entertainment or whatever, it took a tumble. So Royal Caribbean went down to, I think, as low as $9 or $10 a share. This is in the beginning, like right around March. They started kind of going up a little bit, not too much, maybe like to right around $20. This was right around the time I started getting a little bit more serious in stock. And I was talking to a really good friend of mine, and she said, and I was mentioning that, you know, the cruise lines and things like that, because I just had a feeling that right now would be a good time to buy into it. And I was talking to another one of my financial, he was a guy that works with me, and I consider him like, you know, my stock guru, because he's been playing the stock market for years. I mean, he's like, he's almost six figures invested into it now, you know, into the stock market. And I was talking with him about it, and I was saying, man, what do you recommend or whatever? He was like, man, look at cruise lines right now, because they had really high valuation in the beginning, but now they're beginning to go down. So let me dumb it down a little bit more for you. So again, using Royal Caribbean as an example, in the beginning, Royal Caribbean was about maybe $100 a share. It went down to like maybe $20 a share. Now it's back at $70 a share. And I was talking to my friend back in March, right when it was around $20 a share. I was talking to her, and I was saying, hey, I think we should get into it. She ended up getting into it. I didn't get into it, though, because I ended up going with Norwegian and with Carnival Cruise Line, which, you know, those are doing relatively better now. But Royal Caribbean is the one that I didn't get into, which I should have, because she had like 10 shares into it, and she had 10 shares at $200, right?
Wow.
Now her 10 shares are worth $70. So that's almost a No. She had 4 shares at $200, at $20. So it roughly at $20. So that's what? $88, I think, that she had. Now her share now is at $70 a share. Wow. And she has 4 shares at $70. So that's $2,800. So she has made almost $200 in less than 6 months. And it's at an upward trend to go higher, to go more. Because again, people are beginning to start buying more. They're starting to buy you know, more into it and stuff like that. So these are the trends that you have to watch, you have to look out for. And to kind of like to go back to what you said a few minutes ago, the way you explained it is exactly how I would have explained it as well. All it is you're buying a little bit of you're investing a little bit of your money into a company that's going to eventually go back up again right now. And we're just going to throw some stocks out here. So just be mindful of us. Yeah. We're just throwing some numbers out, like Delta right now. Delta is climbing back again. At the time of this podcast, Delta is climbing back American Airlines is still kind of struggling a little bit, but they're, yes. they're starting to get back, you know, they're going to get back into the swing of things. Mm-hmm. All of these airlines, entertainment, anything with entertainment like Disney, AMC Theaters, what's the other one? Six Flags or anything like that. Any of these or whatever that has to do with entertainment is another mm-hmm. one to get yourself involved in, because these are stocks that eventually, once everything begins to open back up and more people begin to come back into these buildings and come back into yes. these amusement parks and stuff, you're going to begin to generate more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a long game. That, you know, that's another thing that we have to explain as well, is that this
I'm so glad you said that. Yes.
Yeah. Very seldom will you actually see a profit like almost instantaneous, like how my friend did. She saw a profit mm-hmm. in less than 6 months, you know,
yeah.
and, you know, very rarely will that happen, because, again, this is you're building yourself. You're building yourself. You know, you want to hold on to the money that you have in there, because eventually it will go back up. Look at the trends. Mm-hmm. If you look at the trends, you'll begin to see that things are going to eventually go back up again. But
yes.
it's a long-term game, y'all. It's not something that you can make immediate money from. I don't believe there's anything that you can make an immediate impact on in terms of money. Not like that. You know, a lot of stuff is long-term.
It is definitely a long game. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because y'all know me by now. I'm going to go off topic, but it all makes sense. It's just I have to go around a corner to get across the street. Bear with me. So stocks, Warren Buffett, I saw a quote by him years ago when I first got into stocks, and it said that if you are not willing to wait 10 years for a return, or if you're not willing to be in this game for 10 years, then this is not the game for you. Mm. Stocks is definitely a waiting game. It is not a here today, gone tomorrow type of thing, which that could happen with certain companies, but that involves you doing your research. So there is not necessarily new, but there is a trend of, okay, so Forex, which is foreign exchange. Right. This is not like stocks, but it's like stocks. So it's where you are exchanging currencies. And this is a game that runs basically 24 hours a day. I think they're only closed like one day out of the week, and it's not even a full day. It's probably like 8 hours between Sunday and Monday or something like that, I think, is when when the foreign exchange market closes. But with foreign exchange, it's a $6.6 billion a day game. So there is money to be made quickly. But the only thing with Forex trading is that you have to find a strategy that works for you. And I don't know if anyone has been paying attention, but Forex is becoming a lot more common nowadays, and a lot more people are getting into the Forex game. There is, I would not say it's a scam, but it is definitely people who are selling a strategy. So TD Ameritrade is the broker that I use to trade stocks. They also have an option on there to where you can trade options, you can trade foreign exchange or Forex, and you can also buy into ETFs and all of that. And I know these are probably foreign terms, but I want you all to be mindful, because like I said, this foreign exchange stuff is going around now where people are telling you how you can invest $10 and leave out with $600. Possible. It is possible. But these people want you to buy into their strategy. They teach you how to do it from their strategy, and then you go out and make the trade yourself, but they teach you a certain way to go about making a trade. So that is quick. That is quick money, but it's also just as fast as you can gain it, you can lose it. So you have to be mindful with that's going around. So don't think that foreign exchange or Forex trading is a scam. It is totally not like stocks, but it's kind of like stocks. You're not buying into a company. You're just watching the market, and then you're exchanging funds at a certain rate. And I wanted to throw that out there because Eric did mention how they're, you know, it's not a quick game. So I did want to say that, because foreign exchange is so popular right now. Don't get suckered into buying into these different strategies. Just do your own research. And really quickly, make sure that you're getting around, and we've probably said this in almost every episode, but you have to get around someone who knows more than you. you have to be in the presence or be in contact with somebody who does not know what you know. They know more than what you want to know in a particular field. So with the stocks, like I said, I use TD Ameritrade to trade my stocks, and they have so many different educational tools. You also have the YouTube University where you can go and you can do your research on these things. And stocks is so broad. I don't even know how long we're going to talk about it today.
I know.
But since we're in the beginning stages and talking about just the beginning and how important it is to start now, also don't get so caught up in what everybody else is doing that you are trying to live up to their level. Like he was talking about his friend with the 4 shares of Carnival, I think you said she had, or was it Caribbean?
Yeah, Royal Caribbean.
Royal, okay. So somebody may not be willing to pay $20 per share for a stock company. But what I have learned to do when I spoke to my financial mentor, he told me to do my research. He said, when you find a stock that you're interested in, do research on that company. So I would Google the company. I would look on TD Ameritrade and I would see the reviews and see the buy versus sell comments from the analysts, because there are people who do this all day long where they monitor companies, they monitor trends, they monitor all the news that goes on with the company, whether there's a CEO change or a CFO, like they monitor these things so you can know. Because most times if a company is about to make changes with CEOs or anything like that, there could be some downfalls or pitfalls that could come with that. So if you have somebody, let's just say, no, I don't want to put anybody out there. I was going to say, let's say you have a celebrity who becomes the owner of a company, and that celebrity has a track record of just trashing everything that they do. That company may switch to him, but that's not going to be good for the investors because they know his track record. He's going to come in and F stuff up in his company. So people are going to bail out. So the company may go bankrupt or they may fail. So there are people who pay attention to these things and they let you know, okay, this person is about to become the new CEO, or they are in talks of doing this. So there's a whole, it's as easy as stocks are. You have to do your research and you have to get with someone who knows more than what you know. Again, I am not an expert, but I'm telling you from what I know, as easy as it is, you don't want to be put in a position where you're trying to keep up with the Joneses with buying stocks. I started out doing was my financial mentor. He told me, he said, Google penny stocks. And he told me the websites to go to. There's MarketWatch and there's Investopedia. And when you go to these sites and you do the research and you look for the list of penny stocks, and penny stocks are stocks that are basically under $10 per share. So you'll find some that's under a dollar. And when I found some that's under a dollar, I've gotten maybe 50 or 60 shares of it, 70 shares, and spent about $20, $30 on them just so that I could see what this company is like. I'm willing to lose $30 if this company isn't anything. But this is just me and how I went about trying to do my research. So also with penny stocks, you find a company that has things for that their shares are $5 per share. So you buy a few shares of those. You kind of watch the market. But again, you also do your research before you even purchase these, because you, when a company shares goes under a dollar, they kind of get, I forgot the term for it, but they're no longer eligible to be considered a Fortune 500 company or right. The Dow Jones or anything like that. So you have to be mindful of that, because if they are no longer on the market, that could be just an account that's sitting in a negative that you can't do anything with because they're no longer trading, basically. So that's something to be mindful of. I'm sorry for going off topic, but I wanted to say
no,
I mean,
you went all
the way around the corner.
No, you're fine, because there's a couple of key points that I want to touch on, and there's something also that I wanted to bring up too, which again, this is, I'll touch on it a little bit. It may not be for this particular time, because we're literally just going to get to the basics of, you know, what
to
look for in stock. But no. But what you explained just now is something that is very important, because if you go on social media right now, Forex trading right now is very popular. Mm-hmm. It's extremely popular. And then there's like YouTube videos, and there's people who want to help, who want to, you know, want you to get in on their course or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they're almost all but guaranteeing this amount of money as far as a kickback that you will be receiving.
Yeah.
And with see, forex trading is very similar to cryptocurrency trading.
Yes.
In regards to the validity of it, like it's very, or the volatility of it, it's very volatile. It's mm-hmm. not something that's going to be, it's not something as stable as like, you know, the Fortune 500 or the NASDAQ or or any of these companies, or the Dow Jones or anything like that. Like these companies that are listed on the NASDAQ and that are listed on Dow Jones, they're a lot more stable, you know?
Yes.
Meanwhile, and again, they have trading deadlines, they have trading times. So mm-hmm. you can only trade during business hours from 8 to 4 or from 9 to 5 or whatever, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
And when it comes to forex trading and also with cryptocurrency, these trades are pretty much all day, you know, 23 hours a day.
Different time zones, yeah.
Right. And what happens, what a lot of people may not tell you about these different types of like forex trading or cryptocurrency trading is that how you said it just a few minutes ago, if you just as quick as you can make your money, you can lose that money. So in mm-hmm. one fell swoop, in one 24-hour period, you can be up $600, but then be down by $2,000, you know, because things like that can happen because it's extremely unstable. It is not stable. So if you are interested in doing that, don't be fooled by the people telling you, oh, it's 100% guaranteed. It is not 100% guaranteed.
Yeah.
In fact, most, with the FTC, I think the Federal Trade Commission, I think they're looking at trying to monitor. They're monitoring that right now to let people know that, look, this isn't something it's not guaranteed. Well, let me rephrase that. None of this is guaranteed. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Not whether you're trading on a NASDAQ or even if you're trading on cryptocurrency or whatever. None of it is guaranteed money at all. Because everyone has the potential to lose money, but you have much more of a greater potential to lose money on forex trading than you do on regular stock trading. Not mm-hmm. to say that you don't, you know, again, you can dabble in it if you want. There are some people that went all in and ended up making, you know, $250,000. I can't do it. I wouldn't do it. You know, but some people have done that and they've seen proven success from it. But, you know, my whole thing is this. It's just like being at the casino. Like, you know, whenever you go to the casino, you always see the people who won, you know, somebody won a brand new car. You know, somebody won $20,000. Somebody won $500,000 playing this lottery machine or whatever. But the question is, how long had they been on that lottery machine?
Mm-hmm.
How much money had they actually spent out? And are you really breaking even? You know what I mean? So all of it, again, is, you know, it's stuff that you have to continue to monitor. There was one thing that you said about what Warren Buffett said, you know, which he, and this is completely off track, but I want to kind of bring this up or whatever, because it kind of ties in line with the whole idea of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things Warren Buffett said once before was, because he was talking about like credit card debt and things like that or whatever, and how people don't understand how much credit card debt can be a detriment to your life, to your livelihood. And mm-hmm. what he said was, if, you know, I'm not going to spend money. If I have money, or why would I want to spend, or why would I want to get a credit card or invest in something that's not going to pay me back? You know,
right.
Like when it comes to credit cards, you know, they charge what, a 20-something% interest?
If your credit is jacked up or if the company is jacked up,
right.
20-something percent. The lowest one I have is 8.9% interest.
Right. And so if you do that, like why go into a credit card? Now, granted, you can still be responsible with credit cards, obviously.
Yes.
But if you're, you know, if you're getting all, you know, if you're getting yourself involved in all of this credit card debt, and you know you're paying 20-something percent, and you're not making any money on the back end. You're not making mm-hmm. anything from that. In fact, you're actually losing money.
Yeah.
So you know, when it comes to credit cards or whatever, obviously the best thing to do is pay off your credit cards, and don't allow that interest rate to hit, and then use that money that you would have had to pay for interest,
mm-hmm.
invest it in stock.
Yeah.
Invest it in property. Invest it in something like that. You know.
A misconception is that people think they need a lot of money to start trading.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge misconception because, you, like I mentioned, a penny stocks earlier, you can buy a stock that is $2 per share. and you can take $20 and get you 10 shares of a lot of stocks. Now are commission free up when you're trading or buying the stocks. They're commission free. At one point, TD Ameritrade, who I am with, they would charge like $6.95 each time you did a transaction. So you would pay the $2 per share, how many ever shares you got, plus a $6.95 commission fee for them to do that trade for you. Well, now I think because of Robinhood, which is an app that allows you to trade, I think that's why TD Ameritrade has gotten rid of their commission fees that they had. But as little as $20 can get you 4 or 5 shares of a particular company that you may be interested in, to buy the full share of those companies. But again, it involves you doing your research.
Right.
And I started out with a couple of $100, and then I, y'all know I'm a money challenge queen. So some money challenges that I did, and once they were completed, I took those dollars from that and I invested it back into the stock market, and I purchased more stock with it. So I have about 20 different companies that I have multiple shares of since I've been trading. And it literally didn't take me using those hundreds of dollars. But just if you wanted to start, put aside $25 a week or $50 a week if you can, or every 2 weeks, it doesn't matter. But it does not take a whole lot of money to start.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And that's one of the huge, that's one of the biggest misconceptions about trading, is that, you know, when you see people on here saying that I invested, you know, $7,000, or, you know, or you'll see the commercials where people talk about trading and stuff like that. People just assume that you have to have at least minimum $10,000 to start. That used to be the case a long time ago,
but now they've
made it so much easier. In fact, I'm glad you brought up Robinhood, because that's the one that I would encourage people to go to, because, you know, Robinhood or Webull. Webull is another one. Webull. Those two are the two ones that you can go to, or even E-Trade. E-Trade is still now, I think they've actually ceased with stock commissions as well. So these are places that you can go and you can start to invest stock in as little as $20, you know. And now they have it where a lot of these companies now will allow fraction stocks.
Yes.
We can talk about that a little bit, you know, when it comes to fraction stocks. So say, for instance, again, using Tesla as an example, you're right. Well, right now, Tesla is at $400 a share, I think, something like that. Well, you know, you don't have $400 to give them. So you can start with, let's just say you have $50. Well, now they have it set up with Robinhood specifically where you can invest $20 or $50 into that stock. You'll only have a fraction of the stock. So that one share may only be worth 1/4 of a share, like 0.25% of an actual share. But still, when the stock rises, your amount rises. So, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. So, you know, it will continue to rise for you. And again, this is another way of making money in your sleep. I did want to also ask you about, are you familiar with dividend yields?
I was going to bring that up.
Okay.
That is something to be mindful of when you are purchasing stocks as well. That is additional funds that you'll be getting on top of the stocks that you, the, on top of the increase from the stocks being, what is it? What am I trying to say? On top of the money that you'll get from the stocks being in a green area instead of a red, you also, even if it is in a red, you still get dividends on the stock itself, because they provided dividends, and if you get this quarterly, I believe. One of the companies I had, Ford, and Ford was doing dividends, but for whatever reason they stopped, and I didn't do my research to see why. But at one point there was a nice percentage of dividend on the Ford stocks.
Right. So let's break it down for the people. Again, let's break it down like a third grader. So I know. And, you know, you and I, we could talk about this, you know, we can talk about this stuff because we are familiar with it. We are well versed in it. But let's break it down. So what a dividend yield means, which is what Angie said, is absolutely correct. It's additional money added on top of whatever stock you put in. So let's just to put it out there, let's just say you have $100, right? You invested $100 in Ford, and every quarter they have their quarterly earnings, And if Ford does well, then their dividend yield will be higher. So for mm-hmm. instance, that same $100, let's just say again, just for quick reference, mm-hmm. you invested $100 into Ford. Let's just say Ford stayed flat the entire time. So all you made was so that $100 that you had put in there in the beginning stayed in there by the end of the quarter. And for all who don't know, quarterly means every 3 months. Yeah. So every 3 months, Ford has an earnings call to explain exactly how the state of the business is. And let's just say Ford did well. You're at $100 a share or whatever. And let's just say Ford's dividend yield is like 3%.
Mm-hmm.
That means you're going to get 3% of whatever the amount of money that you put in there.
Yeah.
Right. So out of that $100, you'll now have $103. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
and that's what a dividend yield means. So like Angie said, make sure whenever you're going to these companies, you're researching these companies, make sure you also look at some of the companies, like for instance, Verizon. Verizon has like a 5% dividend yield.
Really?
So, mm-hmm. Verizon has, that's from what I remember, they have 5% dividend yield. One of our competitors, the company that I work for, their main competitor, which is Altria, it's a tobacco company, their dividend yield is 8%.
Wow.
Right. So just imagine, you know, you're at 8%. That's 8%. That's almost 10% of the amount of money that you put in. You get what I'm saying? How nuts is that?
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
And there's also DRIP, which is the dividend reinvestment plan that you can sign into. I don't know if Robinhood has it, but it'll automatically take your dividend earned interest, I should say, and it'll reinvest it into some sort of stock. I don't know if you can choose the stock or if they do it automatically, but it is a plan that you sign into and they do it for you. So I'm pretty sure they probably do what is best for your account based on your profile.
Right.
But that's also something to be mindful of. And that may be a little bit more advanced, but if you are going to get an account that has dividends, you need to see what you're going to do with those dividends. And if why not just let this plan go ahead and reinvest that for you. I mean, reinvest in a few dollars every quarter or something like that. I don't think that that's going to hurt you, but you know, that's also another thing to be mindful of.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah. And just for the sake, yeah, Robinhood does have that option where you can do the dividend reinvestment. And again, that's money. This is money that you weren't even looking for.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? This is money you weren't even thinking about. Why not just invest that, reinvest? And again, it can be anywhere from 10 cents or from 5 cents to, you know, $25, $30, $50, depending on how mm-hmm. much you invest into it, you know, where you can actually receive that money. And what do you want to do with it? You want to you want to cash it out or you want to put it back in? You know, right. It's always best to put it back in.
And one thing my best friend asked me recently, she thought that when you invest in stocks, you had to keep buying the stock. And what she thought that it meant was, so once I buy it, how often do I have to buy it again? And I said, no, once you've bought into it, you don't have to do anything else but sit there and watch it grow. I said, now you can buy more shares if you want to. I said, but you just, there's nothing that you have to do like monthly go in and change or do anything. No, once you buy those shares, you sit there and you just do your continue to do your research on the company and watch the shares grow or watch not the shares grow, watch the profit from those shares that you purchase. So once you take your $50 or your $100 that you've invested in some stock or multiple stocks, different companies, you don't have to do anything else. Now you do want to make sure that you're not just sitting on one stock. You want to make sure that you're investing in multiple companies. And there's this guy that I follow on Instagram, the Wall Street Trapper, and he really breaks down for the average person stocks. He's from New Orleans, so he talks how we talk, and he really breaks it down. He doesn't have these terms that you don't really know what they mean, and it makes it seem like it's too advanced for you. He really breaks it down. He tells you the good and the bads of stocks. And I mean, it really helps you to follow people who are doing what you want to learn how to do. So in a situation like my best friend thinking that you had to continuously buy the same stock over and over, I said, no. I said, look at it like, and I gave her an example when I was talking to her about Apple and Tesla. She was like, so what does it mean that they're splitting 4-to-1 share? What is that in 5-to-1? What does that mean?
Oh, I'm glad I said, you brought it up.
if you had one share on August 31st, you're going to have 5 shares. Nothing has changed. She was like, so what does that mean? And I said, it just means what you paid back then, you now have more stocks for that particular company because they're splitting. And she said, I don't understand. And so she eventually got around to saying, so instead of me having a $20 bill, I have four $5 bills. I said, see, my mind was not.
That's a very good
way of doing
it.
I can't.
That's a very
good
way of
looking at it. I don't know what you want me to do.
Right.
I don't know what you want me to do.
Right.
So that is something to be mindful of. That stock is not as advanced as we're making it out to. Let me say me, because Eric is on it with the third grade level. I just, it's so massive. I don't know how far to break it down. I don't know how to do that. So when she said the $4 or $5 bill versus the $120, I'm like, well, you should have broke it down yourself, because I don't know.
Right.
But it is really simple, y'all. Excuse me.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I I love the way she broke that down, because that's exactly what it is. So again, just to explain to people what happened was, just recently, about a month ago, almost a month ago, Apple and Tesla decided to do what they call a split stock. And what that means is, they, again, you have a $20 bill, and if with that $20 bill or whatever, instead of having that one $20 bill, you now have four $5 bills. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you've made more money with that four or $5 bills, because it still equals the same amount of money. Now,
right,
the way it could benefit you is, let's just say, for instance, you want to now have, okay, so you had, you know, $20 or whatever, or I'll make it easier. Let's just say you had $200 in the stock. Now you have, what is that? $25? No, $50 now. So let's just say now you want to split some of your stock into and bring the other piece into, Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So now instead of having to sell your one stock at $20, now you can sell two of those stocks that's at $10, because that was, mm-hmm, and the way it works is because in order for you to be able to, let's just say there's an upcoming, a fast moving stock that's on the rise that you really want to get into, or you can see the trends and you see that Disney is about to start kicking some ass in the next few weeks or whatever, but all you have is that one stock of Apple, right? Mm-hmm. But now that you have four stocks of Apple or four shares of Apple, you can take two of those shares and move them to Disney.
Yeah.
So basically it gives you the ability to play around with your money more versus having to rely on all of it to be at one place. You can, mm-hmm, play around with it a lot more now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm glad she explained it like that, because that's exactly how it is. And that's exactly how it works, y'all.
It was the simplest thing. And I'm like, my mind was still trying to focus or stay on stocks. I wasn't trying to give any type of, you know, I didn't want to confuse her anymore. And so then when I told her, I shared a post where people were freaking out that their Apple stock was going down. They got it, I think, at 125, and then, mm-hmm, it got down to 119. So people were freaking out and trying to sell their stock. And so she said, what does that mean? I said, well, stocks is a waiting game. It's a yearly game. It's not something you do daily. It's not, you know, something that you cash out if something goes wrong the next day. No. And she said, so what does it mean? I said, okay, so if you went to the store and you purchased a pair of shoes for $125, and then a few days later you see that the same shoes are on sale for $119, I said, wouldn't you want to go back and trade those $125 shoes for the cheaper pair? I said, that's what people are basically doing. They want to sell the stock that they have now, thinking that it's not profitable or that it's not going to rise. I said, but if you wait a little while, it's going to rise again. I said, it's just because every time that there is a split, it's been documented that, you know, because like I said, there are analysts that who they pay attention to the market. And over the last 50, 70, 80, 100 years, or however long stocks have been around purchasing of stocks, it's been a given that when stocks split, there's going to be a decline, and then they're going to rise again. And then 5 more years, there's going to be another split. So if I only got one share of Apple right now, and then I sat around and I just waited, and the next couple of years, there's going to be another split, and then I'm going to have 4 or 5 shares for my one share that I purchased. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't necessarily go into it thinking like that, but that is a thing. If you can only purchase one share, purchase that one share. There's going to be a split. It happens. You know, so it's kind of hard to try and break something down that is so it's already simple, but it's just a matter of getting you in your foot in the door and getting your feet wet to see how simple it is. Like I said, it's massive, but it's simple. Yeah. So it's like you buy into a company and you chill and you watch it. At times we've seen it where Donald Trump will put out a tweet about something. I don't know why I said that name. I usually don't say his name. So he'll put out a tweet, and then automatically a lot of stocks start to decline, or they'll go down in value. Right. And then a week or so later, they're right back where they used to be. Doesn't stay that way. It, like he mentioned, the market is volatile. So you'll have times where somebody will say something, they'll change CEOs, it goes down. But at times it will go right back up. You just have to really watch the market and do the research.
You know, one of the main things that a lot of people who were freaking out over the Apple declining and things like that, and trying to cash out and things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the things they obviously haven't seen was the trends.
Yeah.
You mentioned trends earlier. You mentioned the W trend earlier. Mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't understand, and you've also mentioned the stock split trend.
Yeah.
If you actually do your due diligence and you do your research and you see that anytime there's a stock split, like you said just now, if you see anytime there's a stock split, the minute you, once it goes, it's going to go down. It's mm-hmm. going to go down. And the reason why it goes down is because so many people are buying into it.
Yeah.
But look at the trend of Apple.
Yeah.
Look at the trend of Tesla. Look mm-hmm. at the trend of all these other places. Don't just look at what's happening right now. And that's what I tell people the exact same thing. I say, don't look at the right now. Don't look at the 3 months. Look at it from a year ago. Look at what happened a year ago and look at an upward trend. Sometimes look 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Look at the upward trend. Look at, you know, and because people are freaking out right now and cashing out and stuff like that. In about 6 months, they're going to be pissed that they didn't stay into it.
Yeah. You know?
And that's one of the main things I tell people all the time. You do not, if you see it going down, you have to have the discipline to not want to pull it out. Now, the only time, my suggestion to pull something out is if it's stagnant.
Yeah,
if
absolutely.
It's stagnant, if it stays the same, like if it's like, that's one of the reasons why I sold my Ford stock, because I had some stock in Ford. I sold it because it's been stagnant over the last 3 or 4 years. It hasn't moved.
Yes, it has. It hasn't moved. Trash.
Right. And so
I got Ford early on. I'm like, Ford has been around since the beginning of time. Let me just buy Ford. And then it had dividends. So I was like, okay, cool.
Right.
But Ford has been trashed since I got it.
Right. And that's what you look at. You look at the trends. You look at whether something has been stagnant for like the last 3 years, two to three years. Or if you look at, you know, if it's been going up for the last 2 or 3 years, or if it's been going down for the last 2 or 3 years, you know, you have to read the market. You have to read the room is what we like to say.
Yes.
Read the room, you know, and see exactly what it is that you're missing, that you're not seeing right off the bat. Because a lot of this stuff, trust me, Steve Jobs said it best. The people that are running or that run this world are no smarter than you. You know, these people, the only difference between the people who actually do this for a living versus the people who is doing it just, you know, for casual consumption is the fact that they've done a lot more research than the person who's doing it casually.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. And again, that would have been the first thing that came to my mind. Like, don't freak out. Do not freak out over it. It's something that it happens all the time. If you do your research on stock splits, you'll see it, and just keep it in there, you know? And again, it's a long game. You're not playing it for short term gain. You're playing it for long term gain. You know, I have a partner of mine who she invested in Starbucks when like this is maybe about, I don't know, how long I've been knowing her? I've been knowing her for almost 10 years now. And she invested in Starbucks back in 2004, I think. 2005, I think she invested in Starbucks. And she said that was one of the best decisions. And she invested in it and she kept it. She didn't touch it. One of the best decisions she's ever made, because now guess what she's doing? She's eating off of Starbucks.
Yeah.
She's eating off of Starbucks right now because, you know, she invested a good bit of money when it was like dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again,
and you have to be mindful of companies, and you're basically buying into the potential of a company.
Right.
So with the people who always talked about Netflix and Amazon in their early days, they, like, I think it was Shaq or maybe it was Magic Johnson. I can't remember. It's one of those basketball players that they were like, man, I had Google stock and it wasn't doing anything, so I sold it, and I would have been I would have had X amount of $1 million by now if I had not sold my Google stock or my Amazon or my Netflix stock when I first bought into it. Mm. You have to, you see that potential in the company as well, and you sit and you wait on it. There was a company who I did some research on when the pandemic kind of started, and it was about virtual learning. It was talking about how virtual learning is going to be like the new wave. So I bought into the company, and the shares were $2 a share at the time I bought into it. And I think now they are $10 a share. Mm. And I don't remember how many I purchased, but at $2 a share, I'm pretty sure I purchased at least 10 of them. So like I said, my little method is like $20. I'll spend $20 on any company, but if it's a reputable one or if it's one that I know is, you know, legit, then I'll spend more than that to get enough shares so that if they ever get to a high or a really high amount, I can sell a few of those shares and still eat, you know, still have the rest to, excuse me, to eat off of at some point. Yeah.
Right. Man, okay, so I'm reading something right now where it says, if you, in 25 years, if you would have invested in Amazon stock back in 1997, it was at $18 a share, right? So if you had invested $500 at the base price, you would have purchased 27 shares. You would now have 324 shares after this stock split. Right now, you would have been worth $568.620.
Wow.
No, I'm sorry. No. $568,620. That's what your stock at 1997 would have been worth.
Wow.
Had you bought $500 worth of Amazon shares back then. How nuts is that?
That's crazy.
Right. And that just goes to show what with the whole idea of the long game. And then, like you said just now, look at the trends. Look at what's mm-hmm. happening right now. Teleconferencing. Big. Yes. You know, I'm going to give, you know what? Let's give you a little gem right now. Let's give the listeners a little gem right now. So okay. Right now, one of the big things to go with is right now, what you call it? Anything teleconferencing. So anything from like telehealth or Zoom, obviously, has been doing extremely well. Roku has been doing really, really well.
Oh, has it?
Oh, Roku. You know, about 4 years ago, I think Roku was at $19 a share. Now Roku, I think, is at $159 a share.
Wow.
You know, 5 years ago, it was at, let me see, I'm looking at it right now. No, I'm sorry. 5 years ago, it was at $102. So, no, that was last year. In 2017, it was at $22 a share. Now it is at $158 a share.
Wow.
You know, the trend of anything in regards to streaming right now is going to be making you money, making you capital. Yeah. Square.
Yeah.
Square is another one right now. That's another one that people are talking about. Shopify, big.
Yeah.
Big right now. Because these are some of the ones that we recommend or that I recommend getting into. Now, mind you, let me preface it by saying this. Angie and I are we are not financial advisors
at all.
And you know, these are some of the things that we are looking at, just looking into, and these are some of our suggestions. But
regular old human beings just finding our way and sifting our way through to mm-hmm. millionaire status. That's all. We are trying to get there. So yes, anything virtual and with the coin shortage, mm-hmm. That is an indication that everything is digital. And COVID has taught us that we can operate without going to the stores. We can survive by ordering things online, and you don't need quarters, nickels, and dimes to buy stuff online, right, unless you're putting that in your bank account to buy stuff online. But the world is teaching us that we don't need coins anymore. So that's an indication that everything is going to be virtual or digital or done remotely. So that is something to be mindful of. Okay, right. So I need to invest in some type of, I don't know if Cash App is a thing. I don't know if Cash App has stock. Let me see if Cash App has stock that you can invest in. But those type of currency things are going to be profitable in the future or even now, you know, so it's good to get into those things now.
Right. I want to say Cash App is owned by Square, I think. I think they're owned by Square.
Possibly. So that is something that you would want to look into. Look into Square, mm-hmm. like he was just saying.
Yep. Square right now is at, I'm pulling it up now. Let's see. Where is Square?
146.
You know, and again, look at the upward trend. Look at the trend right now.
Mm-hmm. I always, they always default to the 1 day trend mm-hmm. Timeline, but I always go to the 6 month timeline because we've been in COVID for going on 7 months or so now. So I always look at what it was either before COVID or during COVID, because if it was low during the March, April, May months and it starts going up, I would probably get in it now so that it can continue to increase. But if it was low before COVID and it's still low now, that's something you just want to be mindful of. But I always go to the 6 month or the year to date chart that'll tell me, so I can look at the trend of that particular company.
Right.
And it looks like Square is doing pretty good. I don't know. I the lowest it looks like it was $41 back in March. Right. And ever since then, it's been going up.
Zoom is a perfect example of that.
38. Yeah.
Zoom was at how much was Zoom at?
Let's see. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Zoom was at 113 in March and it's 369 now.
Yep. So that's a perfect example of why having, again, seeing the trends. Right now COVID is and that's another reason why I say Apple, you know, keep your Apple stock if you can. What are people buying right now because of COVID?
Mm-hmm.
People are buying tablets. People are buying laptops. People are buying computers. They're buying phones. They're buying all of these communications devices or whatever because they're at home. Like, you know, iPads are big right now, especially like with my daughter's school. All of their school learning is through iPads. So what do you think has been surging over the last 3 to 6 months now? Apple has been surging. That's the reason why they can do, that's the reason why they're a $2 trillion company. That's the reason why they can do a stock split, because they've been surging during this crisis, during the coronavirus crisis. So we're saying all of this stuff, y'all, to let you know that it's not scary if you talk to people about it, number one, or if you just do a little bit of research. You know, again, starting off with an app like Robinhood or Webull or even TD Ameritrade, because they no longer do commission sales or commission trading. You know, just getting involved in it, getting involved somehow, starting small.
I tell everybody who does not have stock and they'll ask me when I post about it, they say, how can I get into stock? I say, well, I heard that Robinhood is really good. I don't use it, but I heard that it's great for beginners. TD Ameritrade is really massive, but it has so much that you can do on there. I mean, it's massive, but it is very versatile. You can do IRAs, savings accounts. It's so much that they can do. I've even gone to an empowerment seminar that they had in person before all of this started. So it's very interactive. They have storefronts, so you can actually go into a TD Ameritrade location and speak with somebody. But Robinhood, I think, is very user-friendly from everything that I've heard. Now, I have not actually played around with the app, but from what I hear, that it's best for beginners. So that is something that you want to be mindful of and do your research on and see what works for you.
Right. And see what works for you. And right now, I think if you, which I'll link the bottom, if you do choose to go with Robinhood, I'll link my offer code where you can get one free stock. So, you know, and you can get a stock. It can be anywhere worth from like, you know, $2 to like $1,200, depending on which stock it is. So you can get anything from like a cheapo stock or whatever, or you can get like a Tesla stock. It just depends on what the, you know, what they give you, what they provide to you. There is a couple of other things too. One more thing in particular that I want to talk about before we get out of here. How understanding that when it comes to stock, you have to be able to make sure that you keep up with it. And the reason why is because this is considered taxable income. So I think I kind of touched on that a little bit with you before about how I wanted to talk a little bit about that, is that, you know, it is considered taxable income and it needs to be reported to the IRS. This is something that, you know, especially with the Forex trading and things like that, you'll hear people say, oh, you don't have to report that to the IRS because it's, you know, it's not an actual tangible product or whatever, whatever. Or they say that about cryptocurrency that you don't know. That is not true.
Yeah.
Well, technically, it's not true. So when it comes to trading anything, any type of monies, any type of currency or whatever, you know, here in the U.S. or whatever, it is considered taxable income. It's taxable. Now, cryptocurrency is a little bit different. And the reason why is because with cryptocurrency, there is no actual, no physical money being distributed, right? Or being traded. It's just everything is computer based, is data driven. So, however, the IRS is now looking at cryptocurrency as a property. So what that means is, if you are trading cryptocurrency and let's just say you hit it big on cryptocurrency or whatever, you're going to have to report that as like property. It's some type of property tax or something like that, which we'll get more into it in a subsequent episode. But just to let you know, again, do your research on it. And, you know, anything that you decide to do with taxes or with trading, with stocks, it is considered taxable income. So be sure to put that on your tax return. Otherwise, the IRS, you don't want the IRS come and knock on your door talking about it. Hey, you know, we reported earned income of about another $4,000. What's going on with this? You don't want that.
Now, my broker, they automatically send me the form for me to file with my taxes yearly.
Form,
The 1099. And it also, when you log on to the site, it'll tell you download your tax form here. In case you don't want to wait for it to come in the mail, you have the option as soon as that bracket opens up for tax time. So I think maybe January 2nd, I think, is when it opens up.
Right.
And that's when my brokerage account, they open it up and tell you, hey, download this form. Because, you know, people start to try and get their taxes filed on January 1.
But I know, right?
But they send it as soon as possible. And I, unfortunately, have not made that much that it's had to be reported to where it's over a certain amount.
Right.
But I do still give it to my tax preparer to say, hey, this, whenever I get anything in the mail that says, give this to your tax preparer, I give it to them. And they say, oh, that's not enough. Or this isn't, you know, you can't enter in that amount. It's too low or something like that. I'm saying, hey, look. And then I keep it with all my paperwork. So if IRS, you know, those alphabet does come looking for me, I can say, here, it's right here. My preparer said that it was under this amount of money. It didn't have to be reported. And when I say that, it was like my very first year of trading. I think the dividend increase that I got was maybe $6, because it was like $2 per quarter that I got, and I started in like March, so I had missed that time frame. And the other three quarters, I think I got, it was like $2 per quarter.
Right.
So it was, she was like, "Oh no, you don't have to put that in." I'm like, "Okay, I'm just, you know,
just letting just you know,
making sure." So yes, you do have to be mindful of that, because you don't want anybody with any type of letters on their jacket to come looking for you and telling you you have to pay this back or you didn't report that, so you. That's a federal. No. We're not doing that. We want to be. Exactly. We want to be legal, y'all.
You want to be legal. You're right. 100%. You want to be legal. And again, if you have a tax preparer, anything that you, like you said, Angie, anything that comes in the mail or whatever that says, you know, this is taxable, or, you know, give this to your tax preparer, give it to them. Doesn't matter what it is. Give it to them.
No doubt.
And also, one last thing. This is a little bit off topic with that, but with 401k, if you cash out your 401k, guess what?
Yes.
That's taxable income.
It is.
So be mindful of that as well. A lot of people don't understand that. Oh, man, I wish we can get into like filing exempt and claiming exempt and stuff like that. But that's a whole nother conversation.
It is. But, you know, let me say this real quick about that. I never understood why that happened. But my cousin, she did it for like longer than she should have. I don't think she was supposed to do it for the whole year, but she did it. And she was like, so at the end of the year, I think she ended up having to pay back. And I'm like, well, why did you go exempt? She said, because I wanted all my money. I didn't want them to take out any taxes. And I'm like, why wouldn't you want them to take out taxes? I'm confused. So I didn't understand it for the longest time. And when she was telling me about it, I'm like, girl, so you're going to have to pay back then if they didn't take anything out, right? And I'm like, well, why would you do that? She needed the money at the time. And at the time, they were taking $300-$500 out of her checks, and it's like she could have used that money. So I get it, but I didn't understand it, but it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a big thing right now, and especially when it comes to the younger generation. Oh, well, you know what, let me not even say the younger generation, but anyone any generation now, because back when I was younger, you know, you would hear, oh man, if you file exempt for at least 6 months out of the year, then you just put it back on it the other 6 months of the year, you'll break even. You won't have to pay anything. That's a lie.
Yeah.
That is a lie. That is not true. And here's another thing that the nice IRS tax preparer told me. You can go ahead on and keep playing around with filing an exempt if you want. What's going to happen is they're going to end up changing your tax code or changing something about your tax code or whatever, which will prohibit you from going exempt. It'll prohibit you from doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. And she told me that, and I was like, wait, what?
I can believe it.
She was like, you know, and a lot of people get messed up like that because they sit up there and they think that you can go, like, you can file exempt for 1 month and then don't file it again, and then file for another 2 months and then put it back regular, and then another 6 months and then put it back. No, you can't do that, because every time you do that, it's being monitored. Like, you don't understand. It's being monitored, and the IRS has the authority to place a hold, not a hold, but place a crutch, so to speak, on your social, and which will prevent you from being able to file exempt, because you can't justify the reason why you need to file exempt. You know what I mean?
So
definitely, y'all, if you can, I mean, just let them take it out and you just get it back at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year. Just let them, because it's, you know, like the lady told me, like the IRS told me, she said, you know, look at it as a savings account. It's a savings account. You're going to get the money back. You just want to make sure that you're doing the right thing, because it's a law. It's a law to do, you know. So, yeah.
Wow. So, I know that we went, you know, we went deep into stocks, and I hope that we were able to dumb it down. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just mean to break it down in a way that everyone can understand it. If not, like we've mentioned in other episodes, you can always reach out to me. And I know at the end of every podcast episode, Eric always tells you all that you can email him if you have any questions, or reach out to him and he'll be willing to help. It's Hi There at TMP, or is it different? Is it still that?
It's Keep Going at TMPLifeNow.
Keep Going at TMPLifeNow.com. So if you have any questions, like I've mentioned before, I'm a novice at it, but I am willing to do the research and help you as well as help myself. So reach out to us. But Eric, I do have a question for you before we wrap this thing up.
Sure. What you got?
How are you saving during COVID? Because you mentioned saving accounts with the IRS, and look at it like a savings account. So that made me want to ask you this before we get off of here. How are you doing with saving during COVID?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I have saved a significant amount of money during COVID.
The crowd goes wild.
And I'll tell you why. And let me say this. Not only have I saved a significant amount of money, but my family has, not my immediate, not my spouse and everything, but, you know, because they save all the time anyway. But my mom told me the other day, she said, son, prior to this COVID thing, like, this COVID thing has been a blessing to us, because we've saved so much money. since the COVID has happened or whatever, you know, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, we're not eating out as much, you know, you're cooking at home now, you know, you're at home now. So you're not, you're not given the opportunity to spend. And, you know, you go online shopping. Online shopping to me is a lot different than window shopping, because with window shopping, if you have the money to do it, you're going to just do it. Versus online shopping, you're like, I don't know, should I? Because you know, because you know, you got to wait for it. You have to wait a few days or whatever for it to come in. So, I have saved a good bit of money. I have saved a good bit of money. Not have I saved as much as I wanted to yet? Not yet. And the reason why is because I'm utilizing a lot of that money now to pay off, to pay down, to significantly pay down and pay off my credit cards, because I only have like, I only have three credit cards left to pay. And, you know, I only have a little bit of money. You know, one of them is a pretty hefty amount, but the other ones are, you know, and I'm doing the Dave Ramsey snowball method where I'm knocking down the smaller ones first, and I've already knocked down two of them. So it's like I'm paying everything down. So, or I'm paying it off. My goal is to pay it off and to literally just live off my payroll check and not have to pay, not use my credit cards for anything really other than just for, like, you know, whatever I want to use, you know, if I want to buy something or if there's points or whatever accumulated with it, or if there's cash back or something like that. You know, again, making the money work for you.
Absolutely. I'm so proud of you, though. Any accomplishment, I know it's not what you may have wanted, but if you're saving a significant amount, that deserves a round of applause. And I'm so proud of you. It makes me happy when I hear people say that they've been able to save during this time, because it's unfortunate that a lot of people lost their jobs or they had to get on unemployment. And I mean, unemployment was a little bit more than what they may have been making, but they did not do right by. So when it ended, they're kind of like, what do I do now? So I'm applauding everyone who was able to make some type of, reach some type of goal during this time. I'm so excited. And that's so, it's inspiring and I love it.
What about you? How much have you saved, or have you saved anything during this time?
Oh my, well, you know me. I'm the goal queen, the budget queen, the money challenge queen. Listen, I would have to go through my notebook and see, because you know how they say the things that you pray for, you're living in it now. You have to recognize that because you don't even really see it. But what happened was that I created multiple goals throughout this year. One for sure, I can say that I exceeded. So I'm gonna tell you this one. I said that I was going to save $1,500, which I know that's for me, that's a little bit of a small amount, but I said that I was gonna save $1,500 from March until August. And I actually saved like $3,200. Mm. So I exceeded my goal.
Yes.
But I also said that I was going to pay my car off before this year was over. I said I was gonna pay my car off in May, but I ended up, things happened with COVID and me not working the other job, so that didn't happen. So now I pushed my goal to December, but I think I'm actually going to pay my car off by the end of September. September 30th is the new goal date. So
nice.
Yeah. So and when I tell you, when I'm going to do a video on this story, but when I tell you, last year in April, my balance on my car note was $19,000. Last year in April, and it's August, September of 2020. So a year and 6 months later, I've paid off about $17,000 in 1 year. So I'm gonna tell my story. I'm gonna make a video and show. And you know, I like to be transparent, so I am going to show like figures and numbers and make sure that I am very transparent so people can see that it's possible. So I've said all of that to say a lot of the money goals that I did have, I utilized those goal, the money from the goal to pay down my car note. So if I had a $5,000 goal, I used that to, when I reached that goal, I used that to pay down $5,000 on my car.
Right.
So yeah, it's, I'm excited. I did. So I accomplished a lot of my goals, but I am not going to sit here and act like everything was peaches and cream. I did get lazy during this time. Because I was not out spending money or anything like that, I slacked a bit on budgeting. And it's weird for me to say, but because I wasn't going out, there was no need for me to budget because I already knew what, but you're never supposed to do that. You still should budget, because that way I wasn't sure on what I was going to save. And because I'm like, okay, well, I already know this is due. I know this is due. And it just, I slacked off, and I should never do that. And I'm never going to do that again. But I did get back on track. And, you know, I told you about 2 months ago, I was fasting. Mm-hmm. That was when I needed to focus, because I had not been budgeting. I was paying my bills like right on time instead of early, like I usually do. Right. So it was, it did get to a point where it was not me. I was somebody else, but I did get back on track. And I, what I would say my new budgeting tip is to set a specific day for budgeting. So I used to do mine on Mondays so that I would prepare for the week that I was coming up, that I was going to get paid for Fridays. But I've discovered that it's better for me to do it on Sundays. Sundays are quiet days. Sundays are peaceful days. Those are days when my head is really clear after I'm leaving church, and just very relaxing. And I think that's the best time for me to be in a mind frame to set new goals and to budget my bills for the week or for the next 2 weeks. And that would be my new tip. That I know you didn't ask me for a new tip, but that's what I'm gonna tell you. That's my new tip. So we're talking about ownership. Own your finances and own your budgeting. So pick a day out of the week and stick to that one day, and use that day to utilize your budgeting so you can stay on track. And Sundays are dedicated to budgeting.
I like that. I like that idea. I don't typically have a budgeting schedule anymore. You know what? Let me rephrase that. Yes, I do. Because every time I get paid, I know exactly what needs to be paid, and I pay the exact amount, like, because I already have it set in an Excel spreadsheet, and I know exactly what needs to be paid. And every time I pay it or whatever, the amount goes down. My only issue with that is I start to spend a little bit when I know that something is going down on one of my credit cards. Mm-hmm. Oh man, you know, I can go ahead and, it's only $35 on Amazon. Let me go ahead and get this real quick, you know? And that's my problem. My discipline is not paying it down. It's not paying it down. My discipline is using it while I'm paying it down. So that was my biggest goal prior to COVID. I would have that. That would be my biggest issue. It's just that, you know, as I'm paying it down, I see it going down. Oh, cool. I got like an extra $2,000 on here. Now let me, you know what, let me go buy this watch real quick, because I know I wanted this watch. And I start to get big-eyed mm-hmm. again. And it's like, no, you know, and so that's why I had to stop for a minute. So now I haven't gotten to the point where all of my, because I have a lot of stuff coming out of my credit cards, out of each credit card or whatever, which it's very minuscule amount or whatever. But still, I haven't gotten to the point where I need to redirect all of my charges to my debit card yet. Mm-hmm. That way nothing is coming out of them, but I can definitely see that happening now. That's going to start happening in the near future, or probably this week is what I'm going to do. Is I'm going to redirect all of my charges, all of my monthly charges or whatever, redirect them from my credit cards and send them to my debit card, or I just pay them early, you know. So good stuff.
Good job. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Angie.
Oh, no problem.
This has been an excellent week and an excellent month. So, mm-hmm. you know, you've always given us some really good insight on everything that's going on, all things finances. And, you know, when I first brought this to your attention about, you know, doing something in regards to ownership, you were like, when do we start?
Yeah. And
that just goes to show how much, one, you had to talk about, how much two, you know, how much you had to, how much insight you were able to provide to the people, and three, how willing you were able to allow me to give it to the people. So I thank you.
But you came up with the topics though, because I mean, everything tied in together. Little did we know. I don't know if you knew it, but mm-hmm. as we were talking about each thing week after week, it all tied in together. And you had the epiphany earlier in this episode. Everything we talked about had to deal with ownership. And I am currently in the midst of just embodying all of that ownership. I want to own everything, and I don't want somebody to, you know, be in control of Angie. I want, you know, so it's easy to talk about when you're in the midst of something like what we're doing in life, right? You know, me owning the website and just my content and whatever it is that I'm producing as far as like intellectual property, that's mine. So, yep. You know, I'm, I'm hyped to talk about that because I want everybody to own something.
You got to own something. And that's the thing, because again, without ownership, what are you contributing to the world?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, anyone can be just a regular follower and a regular just go to work and come home or whatever. Now, granted, you may be contributing something to your job, but when you leave that job, they'll just hire somebody else in your place.
They sure will. You know, they sure will.
What are you contributing to society? What are you doing to make yourself a better, not even to make yourself a better person, but what are you doing to make someone else a better person?
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And you know, everything is about ownership. Everything is about legacy. Everything is about leaving a lasting impression on this world. And I feel, just as well as you do, feel the best way to do that is to own your shit.
Yeah, own your shit.
Own your shit. Ownership.
Ownership, man.
Ownership. I'm telling you, ownership. So,
oh my God, I love it.
Thank you so much, Angie. As always, you've been a great insight and a great assistance to me. And I just, man, where would I be without you? For real.
Oh no, where would I be if I didn't know you? Thank you to your followers and your subscribers for supporting me. I do appreciate you all for coming to my YouTube channel and watching my videos and for even visiting the website to see what I have to offer. I hope that you find something that you will enjoy there, or find something that you did not know that you needed. I am so grateful for you, Eric, for everything that you do, that you talk about and that you don't talk about, because you have invested in me as a friend tremendously, and I cannot wait to pay you back. Don't say anything. I already know you're going to say, I don't do it for all of that, but just wait. That check is coming one of these days, sooner than you know it.
I am going to receive it, and I'm going to cash it, and I sure am going to enjoy that money too. Watch me. Thank you again, Angie, and where can everybody reach you?
SincerelyAngieM.com. That's where you'll find everything. Or if you just hashtag SincerelyAngie, I'm sure it'll bring me up somewhere. But SincerelyAngieM.com.
Thank you so much. As always, y'all. Hey, y'all, it's Eric. And, you know, I've been thinking of better ways to try and be more efficient during this whole COVID crap. And it's been pretty nuts going to the stores and seeing either out of stock items, buku people in the store, or even worse, someone that has to quarantine. Ugh. Well, it's safe to say there is a better way out there. And that's why I partnered with Instacart to help you get those groceries that you really need to your door as fast as 1 hour. You heard me, 1 hour. And you just simply download the app, you give your preferences, and the Instacart shoppers will get the products you love from your local stores. And yep, I also said stores. That means you can shop at multiple stores on one single order. So no more going through the supermarket delivery service where you're only able to get a few items that you need and still got to wait for hours to get your groceries. Look, I don't even want the damn avocados no more. I needed them for my smoothie 2 hours ago, you know? So check out Instacart, y'all. Click on the link in the show notes to let them know that I sent you and go shopping. That casserole is waiting for you. Instacart. Never step foot in a grocery store again. Welcome back to the I'ma Keep Going podcast, and here is your Keep Going moment. So I'd like to tell you a story. In my apartment complex, there's a trailway that surrounds the complex. It's a very nice pathway, actually, that stretches from the front of the complex and places you towards the back of another complex that's right next door to ours. Once in the back, there's a mile marker that says 1.25 miles, and it actually places you on the highway, which across the street is a mall. Once done with the full trailway, you complete approximately 2.14 miles, and it's a full loop. I say that for a reason. So I started taking up walking once COVID hit because it actually clears my mind. And that's my time with God, or music if I tend to listen to music, or with gossip if I'm on the phone. Once you hit that 1 mile marker though, the pathway begins to get more wooded and actually really, really beautiful. Lots of foresty trees surround the pathway, so much that you can't even see the sky. Well, home to that forest area are also insects, bugs, animals, and such. And because they tore down some of the wooded areas to make way for gas stations and buildings around us, those animals are forced to find shelter elsewhere. Now, back to that 1 mile mark. You encounter that forest area for about a quarter of a mile. So from that 1 mile mark to the 1.25 mark, you are in that wooded area. And then at that 1.25 mark, you're actually back on the road. So about 2 months ago, I was walking it, and a lady was coming my way opposite direction, and I passed by her. So I said hello, and she immediately said, "Look, be careful. I just saw two cottonmouth snakes. They were just a few distances up." I said, "Okay, thank you," and I turned around, and I went back the opposite direction. I was not going to deal with that at all. And 2 days later, I had kind of forgotten about what she had said, and I went to the 1 mile mark again. And a man came jogging from the opposite direction this time. And he said, "Hey, I just heard that there were some snakes over there." And I said, "Okay, you know what? Thank you." And I turned around again and I walked the other way. Now, in order to achieve that full 2.14 miles, I would have to walk back to my starting point, back to my 1 mile marker, and then back to my starting point again. And so it was accomplished, but I didn't really feel complete, like it wasn't a full lap around the community like I was used to. But I was scared to go through it because I didn't want to see a snake. Plus, a memo was just sent out by the complex early that day saying do not feed coyotes in the complex. So, yeah. So I continued to do my routine of the 1 mile marker to the starting point, to the 1 mile marker again, and back to the starting point. It didn't feel like I was getting a full workout, though. So I settled for that because it was safe and I was accustomed to it by that time. It suited me. So one day, as I'm preparing to go walking, a thought came to my head. Walk through. I immediately felt a tingle down my spine because it was more than just a simple phrase to me. It felt more. I felt more. So I got to the 1 mile marker and I stopped for a moment. And I said a prayer before I began walking into the forest area. And as I walked through, I kept praying the entire time for peace, for instruction, and for strength. I kept praying for all of those things until I realized I was at home. Now, I had completely did the entire walkway without even knowing it because I kept praying for peace, I kept praying for instruction, and I kept praying for strength. So the next day, I walked the forest again. This time, I walked halfway into the area, and a raccoon began strolling by and stopped and looked right at me. And I stopped and looked at it. And we stood there staring at each other down sharply until it removed its gaze and it started to walk away. But I kept saying the same thing. I pray for peace. I pray for instruction. I pray for strength. And before you know it, the raccoon was nowhere to be found. Till this day, I haven't seen anything else, raccoon or anything, but I still say the same things. Lord, give me peace, give me instruction, and give me strength. So my moral of the story is this. Earlier, I talked about fear and how sometimes you have to face, when facing fear, just do it. Fear will always either try to scare you or have you feeling helpless. It could be the one thing preventing you from complete greatness. You know you have it in your heart. You just have to have more faith than fear. Initially, I was scared to go through that wooded area because someone told me it wasn't safe. All the while, it was me telling myself it wasn't safe. We must learn to know ourselves, y'all, to rely on our own intuitions to get us past the fear. My fear resided in the words of others and the assumption of my own head. But eventually it didn't. Because I prayed for peace, I prayed for instruction, and I prayed for strength. And I'm greater because of it. So thank you guys so much for listening in to another episode of the I'ma Keep Going podcast. I thank you once again, Angie Mitchell. We got to do this again. Hopefully we'll be doing this again soon. I got a good feeling we'll be doing another one really, really soon. And I'm just forever grateful, y'all. I really am. I thank you so very much. And until the next time, may the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows. My name is Eric, and I will see you guys soon.